is the Ridgewood South Precinct Plan, Precinct Q of Community Services, Complete Communities Direction Strategy under file SP 4 of 2012. Councillor Nordman, do you want to call the administration for a brief?
Before we move into sort of delegation speaking for or against this item, we're going to ask Mr. James Veach from the Planning Department to give us sort of a summary of where we are to this point in time, sort of reflecting some of the issues that came up in June. And if you'd be as brief as you can, James, but as thorough, we'd appreciate that. So it's all yours.
Okay, thanks very much, Councillor. Yes, as the precinct plan was laid over June 25th until today's date, with the direction that the public service meet with the various stakeholders throughout the summer and see if we can resolve or kind of fine-tune some of the issues on the natural areas specifically within the Ridgewood South Precinct Plan and some of the transportation concerns with regards to existing roadways, the existing Charleswood levee, and other maybe adjustments or concerns that some of the stakeholders had from Charleswood. So through the summer, Public Works met at least four times, maybe five times, with several of the stakeholders regarding some of the traffic and transportation issues. We were expecting Cindy Desjardins to be here to speak to some of those meetings. I wasn't involved in all of them, but she should be on her way. Then Parks, the city naturalist, and myself, we also met at least four times with some of the stakeholders like CCHP and the consultant on the natural areas concerns. And the idea of coming up with a blueprint, a natural areas blueprint for the Ridgewood South Precinct. So based on those meetings and based on some of the requested edits that were submitted at the June 25th public hearing, my revised administrative report that I had posted on our city website under our precinct plans, we had shared it with as many as the stakeholders we could prior to tonight's meeting. My revised report has a series of recommended edits to the precinct plan to address some of those concerns, but many of them were housekeeping edits. For example, labels and things not quite lining up with the same nomenclature, things like that. So if you would like, I could go through our recommendations that's in my revised administrative report. Okay, so we have included recommendations, changes A to X. So there's quite a few, but as I said, many are housekeeping. So in terms of the first change, A was that the title page be amended, taking out the words April 2013 and taking out draft REV2. And then B, a list of figures be deleted and replaced with the following list. So it's the same figures, but it's just some of the titles of the figures have changed. My administration report that's okay. Right here on the agenda. Yeah.
Could I just ask you a question?
Sure.
So when a report is changed on DMIS, it goes through an internal RIS system, correct?
Yes.
So that goes to a CAO advisory group? Did this go there?
It gets submitted through the clerk's RIS system and the PPD RIS system. I'm not sure if the CAO advisory group looks at these or not, but maybe the clerk would know.
Reports are different in that the jurisdiction falls within us, so the reports do not go through the COA office.
My recommendations B, those are changing some figure names, housekeeping issues, changing references to those figures. Number C, this also, there's a Ridgewood South Precinct biological study that was done. there was actually two parts of this study. So C clarifies that, that there's scientific findings, and then there's habitat and species recommendations. So change number C clarifies that. Change D, this was a request to change to map 6, and this came from city administration, parks, and planning, and this was to make some changes to map 6, which is the Greenway network map, removing parts of a trail, adding a connection to natural areas, showing the existing parks outside the precinct, showing the existing schools outside the precinct, and showing arrows on some of the Greenway network to show that they would connect into the existing Charleswood neighborhood. Number E was a just a replacement of terminology, linear park system to Greenway network. Number F, we just changed some wording from outlining land areas to outlining land types. Policy change, this is G, that when parks are named and site signage and other relevant documents, these names shall be chosen from the Charleswood Historical Names List as provided by the Charleswood Historical Society. H is in reference to parkland dedication policies, and we changed the wording for that based on parkland dedication. J is another Greenway network change. K is just adjusting some of the numbering system. L is another change to a pathway policy that when pathways come up to roads, they should come at right angles and not on an angle or offset. So it creates a safer crossing for pedestrian pathways when they meet vehicular roads. Then a policy amendment just to renumber. N is another change with regards to pathways. They should be located within or integrated in the park's natural areas. They should connect with the park system, local sidewalks. So it's just a clarification of the vision for recreation pathways in this area. O is enhancing the Hart Trail and protecting the Hart Trail as a pedestrian route. P is stormwater retention facilities should provide a pathway on one side of the water area. Stormwater retention facilities don't have to have pathways on both sides. Section change Q is a big one, and perhaps I'll let Donna Beaton and Rodney speak to this one. Rodney is our city naturalist. Donna Beaton is our parks planner. And this has to do with that blueprint idea for the entire Ridgewood precinct plan, a blueprint of natural areas to be used in conjunction with the other natural areas studies to make sure that we have everything highlighted and we're working off the latest information and protecting and saving as much as we can and as much of the good quality natural areas as we can. Donna, perhaps I'll let you speak to that change in Q.
So we have added a clause to the natural areas that states that the Ridgewood South Natural Area Priority Evaluation Background Report be recognized as a companion document to the precinct plan and shall inform the long-term decision-making associated with all future development applications within Ridgewood South precinct boundaries. And this is being done in an effort to focus the preservation efforts on the highest-ranking habitat areas. As a subclause to that, we'd added that the ESNL assessment shall still be undertaken at the time of development application, and efforts shall be made to preserve those areas of highest preservation ranking identified in the above reference report and then reconfirmed through ESNL. We do have, should I mention that now? We do have one late walk-on that we'd like to add, and I can, James has copies, just because it occurred to us that it's a conceptual document and we were kind of rushed in trying to do the final iteration of this so that it was part of the decision making tonight. So we did add in, or we're proposing to add in, a clause that says, this would be a subclause to this, the subject natural area priority background report provides a good basis for long-term planning.
But as the EFNL process and continued discussions and acquisition efforts proceed, it's conceivable that priorities may need to be revisited. Any significant changes or updates to the natural areas priority map and or the associated text shall be submitted to Assiniboine Community Committee as information. And I believe the developer is going to present present the background study and some of the information surrounding that. And the reason for this was just to make sure that if things change over time, as we start to acquire stuff, we can revisit how this is affected, or if road networks change, if anything changes in the conceptual design, we're not tied by this, but we have a little bit more flexibility. And it also ensures our intention is that it come back to Community Committee so that it's not just the administration's making a change and nobody knows about it. So there is a chance for public to be aware. And our intentions are to that this always be consultative. I think that was it, James.
Why did this not go in as a change in the report that went up on Friday? This seems very last minute now to put this in.
Yeah.
Friday to make changes on a 2.5-year project seems very last minute. Why all the changes at this last 11th hour?
We thought we covered off all our bases, but there's always questions that come up once we've had it's out to the community, and they contact us and go, what about, are we going to be tied to this? Is this the final? It could be implied that would happen as a matter of course through the precinct plan, because it is a conceptual plan. We just want to give some assurance that A, it could be looked at, but B, that it wasn't going to be us making the determination and it not being administratively making that determination or any kind of changes, that there was a process that had come back to Community Committee.
So, but what have you heard specifically that would cause you to make these kinds of changes to the report?
I think CCHP is probably going to speak to that, but they had some questions that we responded to. There's always difference of perspectives, and once you start to put it into hard paper, then every time you look at it, there's more questions that come up.
When was this report put online, the original report?
It would have been Thursday last week.
No, the original.
The original report would have been about 4 or 5 business days before June 25th.
Was it not on the city's website much before that?
Not the planner's report, but the precinct plan was.
Right.
Yes,
when?
Yes, a month before, at least a month before.
Roughly May?
Roughly May, yeah. Yeah, we had our city webmaster put it on our website, the precinct plan, the background studies. It was up at least a month before the public hearing in June. But your question about the changes is, through the summer, we've been meeting with the stakeholders, we've been meeting with city departments, with the consultants. This actual second bullet was crafted this morning. So that, like, we've been working right up to the deadline. And so then we give the stakeholders the latest that we have. Okay, this is how we see the blueprint working. And the stakeholders review it, and then they come back and say, well, did you consider this, this, or this? And that's why these changes are coming, like, every minute right up to the deadline of the public hearing.
Well, I can appreciate that. However, there's people who came to the last hearing. The report was changed and provided at 5 o'clock. There's people who have come tonight, and now there's another change. How are we notifying people that we're making all these changes, and what version are they to comment on?
It's not uncommon for changes to be submitted at the public hearing for large plans like this. And the notification process is that it was advertised in the paper that the public hearing's tonight. And if they're interested in it, they come to the public hearing. And sometimes these last-minute changes, this is the notification. This is all they get in terms of notification, and it can't be helped, really.
To include this. Okay.
Yes.
All right, James, carry on. Have you got one more question? Okay.
Yeah. So could you tell us, Donna, I guess, or Rodney, what part of the ESNL strategy and policy you followed? What policy did you follow here?
Probably not authorized to do the ESNL. So we weren't able to come forward with an ESNL report. What we did was we worked collaboratively with the developer, their consultants, their sub-consultants, and the neighborhood to try and take all the information that's available and synthesize it into a background document that would then be sort of an underlying document when we do the ESNL. The ESNL is specifically, we checked with legal on this, it's specifically worded that it's to go coincide with the development application. Because we didn't get authorization, you weren't allowed to give us that authorization to do it in advance of the development applications, which we were hoping we could get as a motion from the last meeting. We tried a different approach to at least get some collective understanding of what the highest priorities are. ESNL still has to take place with each application, but this becomes sort of a, I think blueprint's not a bad, but it's a base document that recognizes all the information or as much of the information that we have at hand. So,
these lands are rated right now. So how did you come to determine how they're rated? All the appendices have priorities for the lands. I want to know how you've rated them. That's right on the website.
Appendices?
Yeah.
She's referring to the existing natural areas
assessment.
Oh, yeah. It's a very detailed rating.
Yeah.
So how is it rated?
That's the city naturalist's office.
Makes sense to wait until the consultant presents it as part of the natural areas background report, but you almost need to see that document and that map which they were going to present tonight, which you had requested, and that'll kind of outline and explain how the information was pulled together.
I'll ask it again later. Then.
Okay. And if the answer's not there, I'll be happy to try and help.
That takes us to Amendment R, and again, it's replacing a reference to landscape, replacing it with landscapes habitats. So we're including in the discussion of that policy that we're not just talking about landscape, but we're talking about habitats as well. S, again, that's in relation to the Ridgewood South Biological Inventory that was done by Native Plant Solutions, and the fact that there are two documents with that inventory, the findings and then the recommendations. T, that is in regards to park sites, that if some land on existing parks is taken for whatever reason by development, by future development applications, then that acreage will have to be put back in the precinct in another way or another form of recreational park. U is regarding streets and using the names from the Charleswood Historical Name List for a minimum of 50% of the new streets in the precinct. V is just a change to wording from pathway AT and sidewalk to pedestrian and cycling facilities. W, again, is a change with regards to connectivity pathways. It just makes it clearer and kind of gives more teeth to what is required in the precinct plan and in development applications when considering pathways, connections, the Hart Trail, cycling facilities, etc. Right under, just before X, there would be a new item added, VISA, that isn't in the report, is that section 9.1.2, cost-sharing policies. In sentence 3, we were requesting that you change the term shall to may, so that there will be the requirement for all developers to contribute to a cost-sharing system that will allow for a fair and equitable distribution of obligations to build some of the larger infrastructure items within the precinct. So the term was may, and we're suggesting it be shall. X is a greenway network. That is the we've revised the definition of nine greenway network, and that's just to be more explicit about what we think the greenway network should be in the Ridgewood South precinct. And then change Y, figure 6, 7, and 8 have been revised to reflect all of these recommended changes. So they were attached to the report as well. Figure 6, 7, and 8 have all been adjusted to reflect these changes, mostly to the greenway systems and things. And that's all I had for changes to the precinct plan.
We invite the applicant. Okay. All right, thank you very much to our administration, James, Donna. We appreciate that. We will now move forward with the applicant, and if they'd like to join us, it looks like they've got an audiovisual presentation, and I understand there's some maps we're going to see. So, Donovan.
Thank you. Donovan Taves, Landmark Planning and Design. Thank you, James, for the synopsis of the changes. Can you flip down? I prepared a very short agenda. We weren't sure what to expect in terms of the public hearing agenda and protocol. It's a unique situation. So I went back into the minutes and into the audio recording to figure out exactly what we'd been asked to do and set up an agenda on that basis. So it has 4 points. The review of the text amendments, which James has already provided, and we were also asked to go over those changes with the CCHP, which we did. Item 2, status update on the William R. Clement Parkway functional design study and budget. We can't speak to, but the others here might be interested in what's happened in that regard. Item 3 was to conduct an ESNL, and as we've heard from Donna and her colleagues, that was not possible legally for them to carry that out based on City of Winnipeg protocols. In the absence of that, as Donna's already explained, there was to be a natural areas quote-unquote blueprint provided by the public service with cooperation, participation from the developers, applicant, and the public, and that has taken place. I was asked to provide some commentary, some explanation of that blueprint, which I will do in my presentation. You may have specific questions, again, which probably will end up either going to the administration or myself, depending on the nature of the question. Before we move on there, did the committee understand that there were any other items that were to be taken care of in the interim? Okay. I did include about 5 or 6 slides, which I'll move through quite quickly, which are just a recap of what the precinct plan is, just so everyone's memory is fresh and there's some context for any questions or comments that come up. This slide shows the boundaries with Wilkes at the bottom, Ridgewood here on the north, Rannoch on the north, Perimeter Highway on this side. This is the land ownership. This is part of the significant challenge for preparing a precinct plan. I'll remind everyone that precinct plans are a new idea for Winnipeg, and they're particularly challenging in this context because of the many, many landowners, the fact that the precinct plan is interlaced with existing communities, and this slide alone, I think, represents the reason why it's 2.5 years of work to get to this point. Recall that we broke the precinct plan down into sub-areas, again, because it's quite the animal, with different interests in different areas. We established early on a framework for talking about the precinct, and that's proven quite helpful with areas 1 through 7 south of the Hart Trail and areas 8, 9, 10, and 11 north of the Hart Trail. This was one of the policy plates. There are, I believe, 4 that I'm showing. the land use policy, which essentially shows yellow as low-density residential, red or orange, depending on your eyesight, as opportunities for low to medium-density development. And you'll notice they're along collector roads, along the collector road system. This gray line, it represents the collector road system. Again, it's conceptual at the precinct plan level. Subdivision plans will more specifically lay these things out and design them. Blue, opportunity for mixed-use nodes here at the collector roads. We moved them, specifically didn't have them here, for example, where there's a short connection to the rail. We didn't want traffic backing up at these locations, so we've moved them internal to the community. Gray being the transportation corridor left for the William R. Clement Parkway extension. Green for the existing Varsity View Complex and MRGD Sports Park and the Hart Trail. This is another policy plate. It's a Greenway network map. Attracted a lot of attention. It's been through a lot of revisions, and that's good because that reflects that there's conversation happening, that we're accepting input and making changes accordingly. The general concept is that people should be able to walk in this neighborhood from east to west and from north to south, or ride a bike, or take a bus, or drive a car. There should be many ways to do that. And if you choose not to drive a car, you should be able to get from point A to point B in an interesting and aesthetically pleasing way. And this, because of there's so many owners, a plan like this is invaluable in achieving that over the precinct. So we just see the elements of the precinct structure here, the Greenway network shown in the fat green, pedestrian facilities, cycling facilities, dashed lines showing conceptual stormwater retention basins. There was lots of discussion about what are these things, how do they look. We spoke about that last time. And can they be moved? Yes, they can be moved. It's intended to show that there are lakes and there are some connection with the lakes, with the pathways and the roadways. Existing Hart Trail recreational pathways are shown. And then we added this at the request of the administration, which I think is a great addition. Existing Charleswood shows in orange existing schools and in green existing parks. So you can see the reasons for wanting to connect streets or pathways the way they are shown. Next. This is the transportation policy map. Again, it shows the collector road system in orange running through. I think of note is that you don't see a Ridgewood arterial, which was discussed in the Charleswood Transportation Levy documents and has been on the city books for a long time. It used to be on the Hart Trail. Then it was moved south of the Hart Trail, and this plan rids the Ridgewood precinct of the Ridgewood arterial in favor of a collector road system, which we studied, and Bob and his crew at Stantec studied. Genevar added studies over in Area 1, and have it's resulted in a massive reduction in the potential impact to existing Charleswood roadways. So we think that's a good change. Next. This is the servicing policy map, and essentially if you think you see the collector road system, you kind of do, because the water and the sewer lines run in the collector road right-of-way. The lakes are part of that system. Each lake drains out into a separate catchment system. This is an existing pipe, for example, that runs up to the Red River, Assiniboine River. Another one here. A lack of one near Hearthstone. The Hearthstone drain needs a pipe like that. And so on. And the last plate is the phasing plan. And recall that it's not a chronological plan. So in a given subdivision, you could easily plan there'll be this section and then this section and then this section. Because this is a large area, each section has its own constraints. And so we prepared a map that identified those constraints. For instance, these two pink areas, each of them are subject to another area before they can develop. Area 3 can't go before Area 9 can go because pipes have to pass through Area 9. So once Area 9 pipes come in and are extended south, Area 3 can go, for example. Yellow ones don't require any other sub-area because they're adjacent to existing services. They just require some services which are identified on the plan. Okay, so I guess we'll move into this parkland dedication issue, which is related to the natural areas assessment that's been the subject of discussion partly so far. This is just a little summary of an example of how it works and what do we have to work with. We've been talking with people everywhere we go from the beginning about the idea of 10% dedication, because this committee has been faced with requests, and we've been faced with requests for dedication in the amount of 25%, for example. So we've really wrestled with trying to help people understand the 10% dedication. Normally what happens is a development, a subdivision, is required to give up 8% of their, well, 10%, but 2% of the 10% is given for costs to develop a park, for example. So that's actually 8% land plus 2% funds to in cash. And so in a normal situation, we have 708 acres of developable land within the precinct, back into Ridgewood here. 6% of the 10% that's taken would get used for, and this is an example, active or passive parks, which are needed in the community, play fields, pathways along lakes. We want people to access pathways along lakes. And there's long, intricate discussions we can have about where you get credit and where you don't. But at this precinct plan level, for this discussion, this should be adequate. 6%, and then there's the 2% that's usually taken in cash to fund development within those parks, which leaves 2%. Essentially, this is usually 8. We took 2 away from here and put it down to natural areas, because in this area, there's a clear voice for the desire to preserve natural areas. You take a Sage Creek, for example, not much to work with there. There's not a lot of natural areas to preserve. 8% goes to parks or pathways. In this case, we've taken 2 of the 8%. We can't take all 8% and put it on natural areas preservation. Otherwise, we'd have no pathways, no play areas, no passive parks, and so on. So this is a starting point. And as Donna mentioned, it's a starting point. It's something different in Winnipeg. And the blueprint, I guess it's that name seems to be catching, that it is going to be blueprint. So colloquially, anyway, we'll call it blueprint. We've built in policy where you can expand that 2% by other means. Rodney and his crew have selected some parcels by which to apply this. Where are we going to spend this 2%? What if it's 4? How are we going to spend the 4%? What if it's 6? So we need some framework. We can't eat the whole cookie at once. Next slide. And so this is that colored map. And what you're looking at is a selection of parcels. Anything colored has been selected as an area that has natural value worth preserving in this urban setting. Everything has value. Some will have greater value than others, and there's various criteria by which they were chosen. Councillor, you had asked that question, and I'm sure through this discussion we'll be able to probably ask Rodney to outline the criteria for selection of those pieces. But what this shows is where, if we only have 2% to spend, so to speak, where would you spend it? It's a very logical approach. One, there's the 2%, there's 14 acres, 1A, 1A, and 1A. Those are the highest value areas. Not everyone's going to agree about this, because people who have a natural area right behind their house will feel that natural area possibly is more valuable than these ones I'm pointing at. But somebody has to make a decision somewhere, and this is a starting point. Two, okay, if you were able to acquire those, 1A, all the 1As, and through dedication or some other means, you said, well, actually, here we don't want to spend 2%, we want to spend 4% of that parkland dedication budget, what would you choose next? Hard choices. Expansion here, there's some beautiful trees in here that Mr. Van Roon could tell us about. This is the beginning, or a core, if you will, of an area that's had a lot of attention publicly and valued publicly as very important. What's next? 3A, 3B. And so the idea is that in any given sub-area, in 3, for example, if a subdivision plan comes forward and those owners are able to get together and submit a subdivision plan, now the City Public Service can conduct their ESNL. As part of it, they can look at this map and say, we really ought to get 1A, that's a high priority. And then what would be next? And you could go down from there, 4A, 5A, and 5B. Or, if you didn't select these, you could bank it, so to speak, and maybe pick 3A, if you didn't use the whole 2 or 4% or whatever you're doing. These first two levels are for parkland dedication amounts, so you would take the 2% via parkland dedication like you would today in subdivisions you're going to see. The next one is if you want to push the boundaries further than that 2%, and say, actually, we want to spend less on passive parks here, and we want more natural area preservation, that would push you up to 4%. Here, these last three, the options are outlined here, which is essentially, again, through a collaborative effort, if the will is there, to go and purchase, land swap, or ask for gifting, but not through dedication, because then you're going to have to amend the charter. So that's a brief overview of this system.
How far along are we in your presentation? I've gone over the 10 minutes, but I want to give you a fair chance to describe and explain the plan as you see it today. So
it's fine. I mean, my job here is to answer questions. This is a city plan that you're going to adopt. It'll be your plan. We wrote it for you together with the administration and people who participated in the plan. So take as much time as you need and give me as much as you think I should have.
Yeah, I have a few. So first of all, what would you call this report?
The Ridgewood Precinct Natural Areas Priority for Preservation Report, or whatever is submitted on the title page.
Well, you said a blueprint, but I can't find a blueprint in the policy for the city of Winnipeg.
Right, I mentioned it colloquially. Yeah. I think you
so
called
it. So is that
it,
the blueprint you're referring to?
If we want to call it colloquially blueprint, which was mentioned.
You called it that. I just want to get.
No, I was quoting someone that said it in the first.
Where did you get it?
What?
That. Prioritization.
These colors we received from the City Naturalist Group.
Mm-hmm. Did you request it?
No. Okay, but we understood that we should work with the administration to come up with something, and that's what we did. We worked together. It's an odd thing to say this is a collaborative document, but it is the case. And then I came up with this.
Okay.
I added this.
So where is this in the council policy? The council policy has a matrix, and it consists of quality, rarity. I'm sure you worked with it when you did the Waverly West plan.
No, we did not.
You didn't. Okay. So is this the same as what you did in that plan, for example?
No, there was no requirement. There was no request to do that. But however, in the Waverly West case, when we wrote the regional plan, Waverly West, for others here, has seven sub-neighborhoods, which are each in themselves secondary plans. But there's also an overlying regional plan that sets the guidelines for those neighborhoods, a little bit like a precinct plan. So I've basically voluntarily found what I thought was anything of value, which was a small scrubby tree stand in Bridgewater Forest, and said to my client at the time, let's preserve this. Okay, and then LADCO did something similar down in the other corner where there was the coulee, I forget the name of it. But those were the only two, from a lay perspective, items of interest. Everything else was farmed. So we didn't need to, or weren't asked to, get into the documents you're referring to.
So this blueprint is something unique then in
yes.
What we're doing in Ridgewood?
Yeah, I've never seen
something
like it.
So how did
like
you
it.
Decide those areas that are 1A, 2A, and so forth. How did you decide that those were those level of priorities versus
right.
5A, 5B?
Right, and this is where I'll defer to Rodney. Correct.
Okay, then.
Correct?
Okay.
I think councillors asked for it at the last community committee meeting, so that's why we've been working with the developer to put something together. We couldn't do a formal ESNL, and I know what you're referring to is the ESNL matrix. We're not, this isn't a formal ESNL assessment. It's kind of a, given the information we have without having gone out and done, we don't have an application that we're evaluating it against because that's the intent of an ESNL. This is just looking globally at the existing development and trying to put some structure to what the existing natural areas represent. So.
I just want my question to answer. I want to know that an area is 1A, 2B, how you've communicated that to those landowners, or is this what they're seeing? How do they know, how do we all know this, that these are what they are? Because we're here to make a decision on this plan based on that information, and I just want to know where it's from.
Yeah, I think, Councillor, I may be the best one to answer that question. To start off with, we conducted natural areas assessment of the area, which is the A to D grading system that you would see in the original reports. That assessment system is based on the critical wildlife habitat program, which is a partnership between Manitoba Habitat Heritage Corporation and the province of Manitoba. We used their grading system at that time, which is essentially just putting a letter grade on the natural heritage component of the site. Excuse me. So it would be talking about whether it's a historically relevant grassland, you know, or forest, whether it's got that heritage quality to it or whether it's a heavily disturbed site. It doesn't, at that point, make a recommendation about whether you should be interested in preserving that area or not. It's simply a biological inventory. And I think after the past meeting, it was suggested that we needed to be able to look at things in more of a blueprint kind of way. And you know, we were also kind of on the understanding that we would have to look at the ecologically significant natural lands assessment at some point. So we started looking, our biologists started looking at if development was to take place in the area, which would be the most relevant areas that the city would be interested in protecting, based on wildlife use of the area, the type of wildlife that we're using the area as found in the Native Plant Solutions report, as well as the CCHP bird study. Also connectivity, the way it linked up with other habitat being important, as well as the natural heritage quality. And linking those factors together and considering what would happen if there was a lot of disturbance around, which wildlife would move away because of that disturbance, as some of the bird species would if they didn't have that large area, and then thinking what would be the most important areas. And then we brought that forward to the proponents, the developer, and the community, just as a point of discussion. These are the areas we think are relevant and important. And that basically this has grown from that discussion.
I'm still not hearing the answer to the question I just asked. How do you know these are, as you mentioned, wildlife use, native plant solutions, natural areas quality? How do you know what they are on these lands?
We know what they are, based on a number of points. One of the main things that we worked off of were the biological inventories. So we knew what species were present at the site from the natural areas assessment, from the Native Plant Solutions biological inventory, from CCHP. And then we started looking at other things, connectivity, proximity to Hart Trail, making habitat more valuable because it provides a wider habitat area with less fragmentation, biological value and quality of the sites based on the scientific reports, the uniqueness of the representative habitat. So maybe aspen forest could be considered less valuable than oak forest because Assiniboine forest is nearby and it's a very large aspen forest. So oak forest might be weighted higher than aspen forest. Distribution across the precinct, trying not to have just one pocket, but also trying not to have pockets that are so small that you're not actually protecting anything. To have a habitat area that's large enough that it'll be able to survive and won't get taken over by weeds is also important. So distribution, but also not fragmenting things too much. And a social value, another important thing, whether sites appear to have trails through them and appear to have a public interest. And then habitat stability being another one of the points. As I mentioned, you don't want a site that's going to be so small that it's all edge. It turns into weeds, becomes unmanageable. You want a larger area that wildlife can actually use and will survive for years. So that's, you know, those are all qualities that we were looking for when we selectively said we think this area might be more important than this other area. And then knowing that we weren't going to get everything, so trying to look at things in terms of a gradient. that was basically where the idea came from. And as I said, this isn't an ecologically significant natural lands assessment. It hasn't gone through that process, so it's not that detailed of an assessment. Essentially, when we first did it, it was to be a starting point for discussion, and that discussion has been taken and rolled with, I guess.
I think the other point that's worth noting is when they, I thought it was kind of interesting when Naturalist Services did it, But the mic's not on me, so I'll just wait till I know. You can't hear me, can you? Just waiting till the mic comes to me. You can hear me now?
No, I think it's still on me.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Use your grown-up voice.
I'll try and use my voice. I thought what was interesting was when Naturalist Services did their assessment, they were trying to find a way to visually represent it. It's so, there's so many pieces of information. So they broke it down into two-acre increments, which became a manageable number because everything we seem to be talking about is 6 to 8 to 10. So everything is inside of two-acre clumps. So they tried to organize it. Just, you'll see each of the colors represents sort of a 2%. I said 2 acres, sorry, 2%, which is about 14 acres. Everything's in percentages. So it's about 2% of the expected net area of the development. It's still conceptual in that the net area won't be known until we know what the ponds are, regional streets, because it's all based on gross area less some of these other elements. So it's still conceptual on that basis. We think it's going to be about 700 acres of developable, net developable area, which then works out to about 56 acres of dedication if you're under the traditional 8%, or 70% if you go full 10%. So the 2% increment became a nice working number to see, just visually you get a sense of if we could for some reason could only get 8 or 10% land as dedication, what might we attain? If we get funding or we want to start championing for larger bits of that, if funding becomes an aspect, it gives you some idea of how much you might need to raise to get the next percentage. And we were kind of ballparking land area to be, you know, 50,000 per acre. So that means that for each of those colors, that could cost $700,000 if we had to buy the land. So we wanted to at least have some sense of what does this mean in terms of funding and finding dollars. We don't know the particular land value. It just seemed like a fair number to start with. So that was part of how it started with Naturalist Services, and then Donovan took it and sort of gave it some structure as to what it would represent. And he talks about in the description some clusterings of which ones become sort of highest priority, lowest priority, and the methods by which we might be able to attain that. So all the gifting or purchase or donation or land swaps become more of an expected means of getting the lower ranking lands. It also, we're looking at it both from, as we started to think about it after it was presented, what does this really mean? And I guess from our perspective, whatever this blueprint becomes gives us some focus on where we want to put our attention for natural areas. Should we be preserving, if a developer comes forward and says, I want to dedicate this particular piece of natural area, and we're going, well, you know what, it happens to be ranked 10 or whatever, or 5B on our listing, should we be putting our funding towards that, or should we be saving it to try and acquire a more, a higher priority area? So we see this more as a tool and a means by which we can continue to reevaluate, but it's not saying this isn't hard and fast, that there's a boundary line that it's definitely going to be this. We have to go in and do the ESNL with this kind of patterning in mind and then get that detail on a development application basis.
And that Paula, Councillor Havixbeck, was wanting to be asked, who in fact went in there and counted the bugs and counted the frogs and Did we have people do that, or is that already data we have on file, or Rodney?
Yeah, some of that data was on file. Some was collected inventories in 1993, 1994 by the Critical Wildlife Habitat Program. Some of that was updated by our field biologists when they did the natural areas assessment. And you know, these are, I guess, speaking about their background, these are people with master's degrees in prairie restoration and people who've done biological inventories, doing bird surveys, things like that. And then that was supplemented with Native Plant Solutions, Ducks Unlimited biologists going in and creating their biological inventory. CCHP also had their volunteers, who I understand were professional biologists doing bird surveys in there. So it was those studies that formed the background of the information.
When was that? When was this updated then, I guess, last?
When was this last updated?
Yeah, with those people going in and determining these.
The natural areas assessment, I believe that was approximately 2 years ago.
Okay.
The biologists...
So someone went on the whole precinct?
Not within all the precinct areas. No, primarily a lot of it was surveyed from public land through rights of way and a lot of along the edges, following, to some extent, maybe following existing public pathways through there. And then Native Plant Solutions, I believe, surveyed all the Qualico lands, and CCHP surveyed a number of the private landowners as well.
Private landowners. With the city's partnership on that?
CCHP conducted an independent survey.
Are any of those priorities based on that information?
Yes, CCHP information was part of...
So did we have permission to do that from the individual landowners?
That would be, I guess, a question for CCHP.
I'm assuming we have Qualico's permission, but all the 69 other landowners, I'm trying to determine whether this is the first they've heard that the city has come up with an assessment, or whether they allowed the city to go on.
I could invite maybe Lynn Dupuy to be prepared to answer some questions, but from Native Plant Solutions. The studies that Native Plant Solutions took, can you go back to the landowner slide? Were Qualico lands, which are yellow and the plant's about to come up, and that represents about 60% of the holdings. I'm not an authority on how these things are carried out, but I'll give you my best lay perspective on it. They're just because you stand at the border of one of these doesn't mean you don't observe something on the other side of that legal line. So there's lots that can be inferred. If you go and investigate 60% of it via those yellow lands, you can infer a whole lot on the other colored lands because birds are flying and they're not stopping at property lines. I don't know for certain, but I don't think so. Deer, same thing, and other species, same thing. I'm outside my depth of knowledge here. So there would be, maybe Rodney can pick up on my commentary, but you can learn a lot by standing from a city right-of-way looking onto a landowner's land. But I think your question is more designed to ask about being informed versus the study itself. Is that correct, Councillor?
About what?
Are you more interested in whether landowners were informed or the information itself in the report?
Well, both.
Okay.
I mean, the fact that the city has provided this and has authorized, I guess, essentially, people
right.
going on private property. I wouldn't want someone coming in my yard counting the trees, telling mm-hmm. me I have to keep those trees.
Right. So Native Plant Solutions, for their part, did not go on land unauthorized to travel on.
Councillor Fielding has a question.
Very quickly, I mean, you laid out a detailed plan. So just quickly, what was the public consultation piece of that? You said there was some, you know, people working consulted as well in the area. Is that the case, or...?
For the
yeah.
consultation regarding the natural areas blueprint, we met with the consultant to show them the concept of the blueprint, and subsequently met with members of CCHP to also show them the concept and to get feedback from them about whether the areas shown were areas that they were generally interested in. So there was a number of meetings that took place between those two parties.
Okay, and that's since the last public hearing?
Since the last public
hearing. Since June. Thank you.
If I may, I think it's important for the committee to remember nothing like this has been done before. There's no requirement to do this under the City of Winnipeg Charter. Environmental approvals happen all the time outside the city, but we don't have a requirement for that here in the city. As you're aware, somebody can go in and bulldoze the ditch or the trees down under our current legislation. So the fact that we don't have all of the answers in this two-month period should not surprise you. We see this as a very good step forward, one that might be precedent-setting for other areas of the city. It's very noteworthy in terms of the direction that it's been taken. You could critique it and say it's not gone far enough, but everyone around the table will say, you're right, we can take it further, though, and we should, and there's time to do that.
Okay, any questions further? Councillor Hafiksbeck?
Right now.
Okay. So, Don, if you can sort of start your wind-up here. And
I'm done.
You're done?
Yes,
okay.
Thank you.
All right, well, then we'll move to our...
I'm just going to flip
one last thing.
Back into the agenda just to make sure that we covered all four items off. I know we didn't cover item two, but that's not ours to report. So in case the committee is interested in looking at what it asked for originally, that's the list.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you.
Okay, we have... this is a new form.
Yes.
Okay. All right. We're going to move to the folks as we have had the applicant and for folks in support. And because we're now into the 6 o'clock hour, I'm going to ask people to keep it. And can we time, Kathy? Yeah. We can time? That's Kathy, right?
Yes.
Okay. So we'll give people up to 6 minutes. Are we agreed with that? That would be fine. And try and get your point across. And as Lisa, our clerk, has reiterated at the outset that we're really looking for new information. So if you've heard somebody say what you were going to say, we appreciate that you'd share your support, but that you don't have to come and tell us again. So we'll ask the first person up is Eric Vogan, and 6 minutes. You're fine, Eric? You're in support? Ravi Joshi, in support? Jeff Pratt, in support? Ken Howell?
Can't do it.
No. Well, that's a nice gesture, but there's no carryovers here, so this isn't golf. And anyway, Ken, did I do Ken Howell? Sorry. Thanks, Ken. Lori Wilson Zenzing, in support. Thank you. Bill Eva, in support. Bill. Barbara Hutton. 6 minutes?
Yes.
Okay.
She's in favor.
She's in support. She's got in support. Six minutes.
Good evening, councillors.
Thanks.
I'm speaking here as a representative of the Friends of the Heart Trail, and we are in support of the precinct plan as it is presented. We have conditional support, however, because we want to make sure that there is an accessible, safe pedestrian crossing of whatever happens with William R. Clement Parkway. We are understandably concerned about preserving as much natural area along the Heart Trail as possible. We've been very pleased with the consultation process that we've had with Landmark, with Donovan, and also pleased with the process that CCHP has undertaken with the city. We understand recently that the actual configuration of the William R. Clement Parkway, as it's shown in the precinct plan, is not carved in stone. This is a work in progress, and it may not end up looking like that. And that's why we want to make sure that our concern is noted. The other thing is that we want to urge that future development, like developments within sub-areas that come forward, and future developers that want to develop, the landowners there that want to develop their portions, that those landowners are held to the standards of the precinct plan, because a lot of work has gone into that. So as Friends of the Heart Trail, we need to make sure that we're holding the other people accountable to the plan should it be adopted. I think that's a very important thing to do. As Donovan said, nothing like this has been done before. And often you'll hear people say that certain things are not economically viable. But about 110 years ago, there were decisions made that were not, at that time, considered economically viable. But someone said, this is important, and we need to do this right, and we need to do this now, so that people in the future have something. And now we have Assiniboine Park, and we have Assiniboine Forest, and nobody would want to give those up. And I think there's an opportunity here for us to be as forward-thinking as our forefathers were. So if we can take what bones that we have here and make sure that we deal with the future development of this area, we can preserve a good portion of what Charleswood is and why Charleswood is such a desirable place to be. And I think that that is less than my 6 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. Don Hester? Sure, go on down. I'm going to put people on deck here so that we save the travel time. Judy Taylor, Mike Armstrong, Greg Davey, Scott Minty, if any of you are wishing to speak, if you could come down to the bench here behind the dais.
Or just tell us if you're in support.
All right, sir. You got six.
Well, good evening, councillors and ladies and gentlemen. I have a couple of points. I'm in support of the precinct plan, but I'd like to make a couple of points from the point of view of being the consultant representing AECOM. We're the planners for Area 10 of the precinct plan for Seekville, Inc. So I should note that we have had we've played a part in adjustments to the precinct plan. We participated, I guess you'd say, in the planning process, both in terms of causing adjustments to the development phasing and dealing with some of the municipal infrastructure that went into the plan. And we have a couple of concerns. First is the transportation or infrastructure levy that's proposed, and I gather that it's going to be shall instead of may, for internal collector roads and other infrastructure. We don't believe this levy should apply to Area 10, since Seekville is being asked by the city to provide a separate transportation study and to address off-site improvements in the area north of Ridgewood. So we basically see that Area 10, located north of the Heart Trail, is infill in Charleswood. We have a lower density of development proposed. Total lots would be 79 or 85 if you include some lots that could be developed by another developer. Since it's basically infill, and since basically traffic would go to the north, we don't see that basically this area should be contributing to a east-west transportation system. Most of the, I think the developers should either receive a credit for their transportation study and any improvements they do, or basically it should be delinked from the study, from the precinct plan. And furthermore, when and if Seekville and their partners develop land in Area 3 within the precinct, there should be credit for the collector pairs that were proposed. They were proposed in a study back in 2006. They've been adopted by this precinct plan too. We see that really the collector pairs or developing those pairs through any piece of land really is part of creating that major transportation link. And we see that basically the developers are doing their part to create the linkage by having those, by developing the roads within their lands. Therefore, contributing further to other lands is something that we don't see as being appropriate. Furthermore, we understand that consulting fees are being levied against developers within this area. My client has spent consulting fees probably in excess of what would be their proportion of the land area, and we believe that they should be credited with those. Either they be added to the total of consulting fees and then credited back, or some other means be developed to address this issue. That's all I have to say. Thanks.
Thank you.
We got some questions for you.
Sorry, Don, if you could just return here. Councillor Havlicek has a question. Sorry, I was looking the other.
Just a couple things. You mentioned the consulting fees. Has the developer that you represent, I guess, contributed to some consulting costs?
The consulting fees were paid to AECOM, and AECOM worked with Stantec and others to try and make adjustments to the proposed plan.
Okay, so there were no other consulting costs then that your client had to pay?
Yes, he paid the fees.
To AECOM.
To AECOM.
To AECOM. That's all the consulting costs then?
Right.
Okay. And in preparation and in the work that you did from AECOM, had you seen this and were you aware of the level of priority of the
no.
the natural habitat?
No, it's new, among other things that happened tonight.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, thanks.
Good. Judy?
Yep.
Okay. You got six.
Hi, I'm Judy Taylor. First of all, I agree with the plan, especially with the amendments that James mentioned, and as long as they are adhered to and followed. Why I wanted to speak, though, is I want to ensure, and I want, I guess, reassurance that this plan is a plan, is a policy. It's just not a lot of written paper that at the end of this, everybody else is, any developer is going to be able to do whatever they want, whatever they want, whenever they want. If this is a plan, if this is a policy, if this is going to set a precedence, the same as Donovan said, this is new, that we are doing this new, that means it's got to be followed. And if it's not, well, then throw the plan out now and don't worry about it, because we're no further ahead.
They're in a trailer, and he's going to watch. So.
That's all. Yeah, I'm going to say.
Any questions?
No?
That's great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mike Armstrong, in support. Scott Minty, support. Greg Davey, thank you. Adam Scharf. Thank you. Terry Beauchair? In support. Thank you. Sorry, I was maybe not right. Douglas Scott? Thank you. Darlene Beauchair? Okay. As we go forward, Abe Friesen, Victoria McDonald.
Just yell out if you're in support or you want to come back, come up, then feel free to come to the mic.
Bob Kerslicko. Sorry.
Support.
Bob, you're in support?
Thank you. Roland Desmillion. Roland? Are you here? Okay, that's good. All right. Darlene, you have 6 minutes.
Okay. Oh, I won't take that long.
Okay,
my name is Darlene Boettcher, and I am in support of the plan somewhat conditionally. I think it's a well-thought-out plan, and it's been based on extensive consultation, and I want to commend Qualico for the biological inventories that they commissioned Native Plant Solutions to do. There are certain conditions in the plan that require certain processes to be followed, and I think I'm alluding to what Judy Taylor said, is make sure the plan is followed. I was very, very perturbed that in the same day you were planning on passing the precinct plan and then passing amendments on it. If the plan isn't good, then don't pass it. If it's good, don't pass a variance 30 minutes later. We've had some, CCHP has had some very good consultations with city workers, or the City Planning Department and the Parks Department recently, and there's no commitment in writing or captured on a cell phone, as is the popular way of capturing commitments these days. But I really feel that good intent was shown at the recent meetings, and it's all about trust and making sure that those things are followed through, so please don't disappoint us. I think the current plan is better than the original plan. I really want to thank the councillors, and Paula in particular, for encouraging the development of whatever we want to call that blueprint, because that I don't know that I could have supported the plan without a plan for natural areas for the whole precinct. I believe it's the best we can achieve under city current guidelines, and that if this plan is defeated, we may not get as good a plan in the future, and that's why I'm supporting it.
Questions? No? Thank you. Abe Friesen. Mr. Friesen? He's not here. All right, these three people want to be heard in this particular order. Victoria McDonald, Alan Roberts, and Wesley Chamberlain. And the last one would be Roland Demion.
Hello. I would like to thank you for the opportunity of speaking to Council today. My name is Victoria McDonald, and I'm the Chair for Citizens for Charleswood Habitat Preservation. I'm voting in support of the precinct plan tonight, and I just wanted to review a little bit about why we came to support the plan, because in June, ACC meeting, we opposed the plan at that point in time. And the reasons why we opposed the plan was because we felt that while there was plans for roadways and sewer and water and other sort of supporting functions for the area, we felt that we needed to have an overall blueprint plan for natural areas. And we felt that that was very important moving forward, knowing that there had to be individual sub-area plans and ESNL assessments done as each sub-area plan arose. And we felt that if we had a vision for what we could potentially obtain in terms of natural areas, because as Donovan had indicated, and also as paper that the Parks Strategic Planner and the naturalist has put forward, there's lots of competition for a finite period of public reserve that's allocated to any given area, and so we felt that this would help provide a vision. So we'd asked for that actually at the last June meeting. We also asked that 10% be of the public reserve be assessed for the entire area versus allocated to each sub-area, and we feel that the natural area blueprint helps achieve that. So we know we can identify where the higher quality areas are, where they're lower, where we could potentially accept cash in lieu of and apply to other areas where there's a larger amount of higher quality areas. We also felt that we wanted to create targets and goals for tool use to acquire additional natural areas. That was something that we wanted to make sure that we took a look at. And we also wanted to ensure that money in lieu of public reserve that was dedicated within the precinct plan stayed within the precinct plan, and we felt that that was very important as well. So since then we've had several meetings, and Al Roberts and Wes Chamberlain will speak to the meetings with Public Works and other related groups, but I'm just speaking here about the natural areas. Since over the summer, we met with the city naturalist, Rodney Penner, and the park strategic planner, Donna Beaton, James Veach, the principal planner, as well as Donovan Taves from Landmark Planning and Design. Sorry, Donovan. At any rate, we had a series of meetings. They were constructive and productive, were able to provide input on recommendations for selected natural areas and available tools to acquire the land, also just to take a look at a draft natural area blueprint. And then the document was actually created, and we received a copy of the revised blueprint and the companion document that both Rodney and Donna spoke to. It was at a late date, and we had some concerns in terms of what we saw, but we had further discussion, and some of our questions were answered, and we were satisfied with the response that we received. So, and part of the issues that we had moving forward is our ability to participate in a continued planning process for all of this. And assurances were given that, yes, indeed, input and consultation would be sought as we move forward after the plan is approved. So that went a long way to reassuring us that for support for our plan. Also, I just wanted to mention that the piece that Donna had been speaking to about adding to the plan just recently, she also discussed with us, and we felt that that went a long way to supporting some of the concerns that we had. So for those reasons, we support the plan tonight.
Councillor Happersbeck has a question. Thank you.
I have a few questions for you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for coming today and for all your work on this file. I'm just not clear, you know, there's been a lot of changes to the report, not really significantly huge changes. And I'm curious about, you were adamantly opposed at our June meeting. What has changed since June to now, specifically in the report and the changes proposed that make you support it now?
I'll only speak to the natural area piece, but certainly the whole issue of that a natural area blueprint was developed, and it's the starting point. And I think that that was very important. It's one a clear request that we made in the June meeting, and it was actually directed that one be made, and we were very pleased about that.
We couldn't make any direction out of this meeting, so
a recommendation
does
then
not allow for it, and so we didn't make a direction. We couldn't make a direction because it was still part of a hearing. So
okay,
yeah. So well, the blueprint then.
Yes, okay. Yes. But it was a concern that we had expressed, and mm-hmm. so and now we're looking at a blueprint that is a starting point that we can work with moving forward. So that was huge. The other thing was the whole issue of being able to take money that was put in lieu of natural areas in cash to be able to take that money instead of spending it in other areas, have it brought back to potentially purchasing more natural areas within the Ridgewood precinct according in a systematic manner. So that was helpful as well. The other thing is that the good intent to involve the community as we move forward and as the sub areas are developed. And that's very important because we're not going away, and we are working with the community in terms of each sub-area plan. So it was good to know that the communication lines are going to be remaining open, and we'll collaborate as we go forward in the future.
Okay, so for you, the blueprint is what has convinced you to now support it. When you were here in June, you pushed for 25% natural areas, natural lands be preserved. That blueprint to me shows 8 to 10%.
Yep.
You're okay with that?
Well, no. I mean, you know what? I suppose I wish we could have 25%. But I think that, and in the email we also sent out to CCHP supporters is through the process, we've come to realize that 25%, while we'd like to have that, certainly can't be obtained through the development agreement parameters. And I think it's a learning curve, and we've come along that way too. And we've also come to realize that there are available tools that the city is willing to pursue and apply, actively and committed to doing to increase the area. And the other thing is that we put on the table as well at the last meeting is we know that fundraising is going to be inevitable to increase that area. So, and we've sent the call out through our emails for that as well, that that's on the horizon.
You sent a call out requesting money?
Nope. We sent out emails to say, you know what, fundraising is going to be inevitable if we want to increase the amount of natural areas in the Ridgewood precinct.
Okay. How many people does your organization represent who live in Charleswood?
We probably are over, I don't have the numbers with me, but it's over 300, probably closer to 350.
And they would say that you are their spokesperson then for this?
Well, I mean, we certainly solicit their input, and we've had three community meetings over the two-year period. We also take emails and respond to them, and we collaborate with various groups like the Vanscoy Group and different people on Laxdal and Haney. So,
our last meeting, because we have the minutes now as part of the record, was on Thursday, correct, with members of our administration?
It was actually on
the 5th.
Yeah, is that Thursday?
Yeah.
Or was it Tuesday? Was it Thursday? Okay. There are several, so sorry.
So since last week to today, you have converted and support this wholeheartedly. Your website still says vote no to Ridgewood South and email your city councillor.
Does it?
Yes, it does.
Then we'll change it. Then we'll change it. I'm sorry. Then we'll change it.
Okay. That's all the questions I have.
All right.
Thanks, Victoria.
All right.
Don't worry about the website. City councillors have stuff there from 2008. So.
Speak for yourself.
Alan Roberts. 6 minutes.
May I use this microphone rather than this one?
Kathy,
I have a willing assistant. So perhaps we can use both, or at least use this microphone. give me a minute to introduce it first. I guess we have had a tremendous amount of input from the city over the past week, input that we have been seeking since June 25th, and we didn't receive it until this past week, and so it does take time to consume it, to digest it, and then to formulate a representative position for the group. And so I think we've done remarkably well in coming to the position of support, in getting the support that we have from the city, because it has been support, and in putting it together as quickly as we have been able to. What we do have, though, is conditional support, because while we have had support, it is an amorphous body, the city is, and no one group can commit the city on behalf of the city. I mean, it's not something that is possible or available, and so our support is basically on the assumption that the support that has been offered or has been discussed and is highly probable actually is brought to the table. And that is partly dependent upon you folks. I mean, we have some expressions of commitment from the civil servants. We also need some expressions of commitment from the ACC, and of course from City Council as well. But you folks have to buy into this yourself. We're dependent upon your support in order for this thing to go ahead. Anyway, with that, perhaps if you'll pull up. Okay, conditions of our support, the city will support, our support is based on the city supporting the precinct development with timely creation of infrastructure. Now, we're dependent upon the parkway to keep the impact on the rest of Charleswood down to a dull roar. If you can get that for us, at least it'll be a dull roar and not something that results in major upheaval. The city will mitigate the impact on existing infrastructure. I'm convinced that the impact is not huge. The civil service, I believe, is on side with us to try and keep that down to a level that is reasonable. In other words, we're after predominantly pedestrian protection via sidewalks to be added on to two or three locations two locations that are over and above what is required, if you will, by already anticipated funding. Go on to the next slide there, if you would. This identifies the areas that is of particular concern in terms of local impact. The left-hand one there on Rannoch is for pedestrian safety really only. We're looking for a sidewalk to go along the side of Rannoch from Community Road to Charleswood Road. Twice a day there is a horde of high school kids walking along the road and mixed with a considerable quantity of vehicles, and it's not a safe situation. We're looking at approximately a 35% to 40% increase in traffic on that stretch of road, and we think a sidewalk is really the only way to mitigate that enhanced risk or increased risk level. Whether that requires some adjustment to the storm sewer or not remains to be seen, but that's an issue that we'll have to deal with when we get to it. The other one is Hearthstone Road, which we'll see an approximate 65% increase in traffic volume. It is a major increase to an already fairly heavily loaded piece of roadway. The crowns in Charleswood, as you're probably aware, are only 20 feet wide, servicing vehicles traveling in both directions. And if you get a car parked along the side, especially in the wintertime, there isn't much roadway left. And if you stray a few inches off of that 20-foot crown, the ditch is between 4 and 6 feet deep. I mean, you disappear. Eh? It's you have to call a crane to get you out of there, not just a tow truck sometimes. Anyway, it's an area that really needs a sidewalk. You cannot put a sidewalk in there unless you put in a storm sewer. There is already an agreement for 50% funded city and 50% developer-funded upgrade to the storm sewer, which goes from Dieppe along Eldridge to Hearthstone and up Hearthstone to Robin. So almost all of that stretch of roadway is going to be probably torn up anyway by the installation of a new storm sewer, making that Hearthstone drain connection. I'm saying finish the job, do it properly, put in the roadway cross-section that'll give us a safer width of road and allow for the installation of a sidewalk. That one is left somewhat in abeyance, but in terms of decision making, but given that there's $2.6 million already allocated for that piece of work, I don't expect that the sidewalk's going to add hugely to that. Okay, appreciate that very much. Dieppe Road, in discussions with Public Works, the indication was that the upgrading we were looking for there is discretionary and would be paid for by Pembina Trail School Division anyway. They are in discussion with the school division, so I guess I'm less concerned with you folks being involved in that decision, less concerned also with it becoming a local improvement issue, which would be almost guaranteed to fail, and more positive that it will actually occur in a timely fashion. Next one. This just defines what I've just told you in more definitive terms, so if you want to read it, you're welcome. I'll send you a copy of the presentation. Next one, please. One further condition is the noise and vibration, particularly the noise issues, as they apply to, and James will recall our discussions in this regard, particularly as a reply to the William Clement Parkway, and possibly if you're willing to make it applicable to the perimeter highway as well. But you're passing through an area where there's approximately 90 houses backing onto your road allowance, houses that are long-standing, that have been built without any anticipated noise source, with a new noise source being added right in their backyard, essentially. It is not that big of a cost impediment to provide for the control of that noise to something in the order of 55 dBA, which is, by the way, 10 dBA less than your standard policy in the city, during the daytime, and 45 dBA at night. People that can't sleep tend to get rather annoyed, so I would expect that would be in your own self-interest to do your best to see that that were carried out. Next one, please. Cost, the upgrades, all of which that I've talked about, particularly on Rannoch and Hearthstone, I'm expecting, because the majority of them will be paid for by a combination of the developer and the City of Winnipeg anyway, and some would be paid for by the Pembina Trail School Division, that we can get by without any local area improvement or local improvement charges. So hopefully you'll be able to make that happen between the two of you, between the civil service and the councillors. The next one, design flaws. Well, they can be remedied by inclusion of CCHP, I believe, in the design review team. As these elements, and there are a number of elements which are still being contested, routing of the Ridgewood connector is a good example. We're not looking to change connection points, but the routing between those connection points, I believe, could result in a much improved value in terms of natural areas retention in at least one location. We may also be able to make for a better connection onto William Clement Parkway. But that remains to be seen. There are issues that are best addressed during the design development phase. It's really a case-by-case, time-consuming operation. I don't want to get into them right now. But for the Parkway extension, the Wilkes Avenue study, the developer's sub-area plan review, individual plans that are for each individual sub-area have to be submitted and reviewed by the city. I'm asking that we be involved in that review. Rather than trying to critique it at meetings such as this, if we were involved in the design review, it would be a big help and speed up and simplify the process.
And Alan, I think that's been our practice, and I think we'll make sure that happens. So
that's essentially the extent of my...
Your final point. That concludes it? Question?
Take a look at the next one. I think that's it. Yes, that's
great.
All.
Paula has a question.
Thank you for your work on this file, Alan. I'm going back to your submission and presentation from June 25th, and you identified four areas, and you spoke to mitigating the impact of the precinct development. You talked about Rannoch, a sidewalk. You talked about Hearthstone, the ditch issue and the drain DF. You talked about costs of local improvement. You talked about that. I'm not sure I heard You asked for the city's policy regarding noise and vibration attenuation to be upgraded to include an attenuation policy for residences adjacent to the CN rail line, eliminate duality of fences, ensure noise attenuation walls at least 3 meters above the top of track. And then your fourth one was related to the Clement Parkway, avoiding bisecting the Buckingham Forest. Were those last two, points three and four, then resolved for you?
The last one, yes. The last
specifically
one.
On the noise attenuation, I don't know that we have a motion or anything that can come out of this committee related to that, but how was that addressed, I guess, since the last
two? Two ways. The constraints that have been put onto Area 7, I believe, are indicative of what will be applied to Area 1. It's been some time since I read the precinct plan, but they called for a berm, I believe it was a 3 meter high berm along the length of the railway track, together with a 3 meter wall, and essentially noise attenuation wall, which would be extended upwards essentially from the track height. If you add the berm height onto the grade, which is immediately north of the track, you're roughly at the track level, the top of the track, and so the wall would be above that, and that is essentially CN Rail's noise attenuation policy, is the installation of that type of sound barrier. As it applies to the roadways, perimeter, and William Clement Parkway, I've changed tack a little bit. You'll notice, or you'll find, that if you go after the 55 dBA that I've asked for as a noise attenuation level at the property line of the road allowance that you occupy, you will have a structure very, very similar to what I've already just described for the railway. So both attacks, or both means of approaching that problem, give you roughly the same answer. The DBA constraint gives you a little more freedom in just how you go about achieving that.
Thank you. That's it.
Okay.
Is Roland here? Roland's not here. Roland's in support. And Wesley Chamberlain, you're the last man.
Wes is.
Just while Wesley's setting up, he's our last presenter at this point in support. If there's anybody else who is in support, hasn't got one of these green sheets, it's not too late for you to sign one and come down and make your presentation or give us your thoughts. If not, Wesley will be our last presenter in support. We're going to take a 20-minute break and hopefully be back here just after quarter past, and then we'll start the folks in opposition. Okay?
Good evening, everyone. I was hoping to see my notes on the computer, but I'm not technologically savvy enough to get it going, so we'll wing it a little. A lot of people have echoed this, the sentiment, and I kind of wanted to put up a finer point that there's a difference between supporting the precinct plan and supporting the precinct development. a lot of the work has gone in this last week to, you know, get the precinct plan, and a lot has been coming back to us saying it's conceptual, it's a guideline, it's a structure. So moving forward in support, the expectation is the discussions will continue further. So I want to kind of add, you know, a few bits of new information and kind of, you know, round out that sentiment. So I'm one of the 90 properties on the William Margaret Clement Parkway extension. So, yeah, I will be cranky if I don't sleep, like Kyle says. That is what brought me into this. And since then, I've found that there's a much larger transportation network that needs to be addressed. That is applicable to the Ridgewood South Precinct Plan. This larger transportation network, it will determine the quality of travel within the Charleswood Tuxedo Ward, and at present, this network is grossly underdefined. It's critical to recognize that support of the plan is not support of blanket development. Many issues still remain unresolved, and it'll be up to our city officials to decide if the sub-area developments are feasible based on the precinct plan requirements. Approval of the precinct plan is not a green light for development. Rather, it is a standard that developers must be held accountable to. I'd like to highlight a couple of the key transportation and economic issues that I brought up on June 25th and a couple of other, you know, expansions on those concepts. All right, roll through that. So I mentioned the Charleswood Transportation Network. My definition of that network is the system of roads, sidewalks, trails, and greenways that facilitate the movement and interaction of residents, flora, and fauna. This network, most of my requests of more detail have been deferred away from the precinct plan because this was outside the scope of the precinct plan. That's a very valid point. It is outside the scope of the design of the precinct plan, but it is explicitly written within the precinct plan that Wilkes and William R. Clement Parkway are integral in that plan, that development actually functioning. This is one quote from Section 6 of Appendix C of the plan. The extension of the William R. Clement Parkway to Ridgewood Collector is required pre or concurrent to full build-out and must be completed before the subdivision is fully built. It needs it. As far as Wilkes goes, Stantec anticipates that if the extension of the WRCP intersects with Wilkes Avenue, the latter will be widened to four-lane divided arterial standards east of the anticipated intersection. There are expectations on the Charleswood network within the Ridgewood Precinct Plan. So while it's outside of it, they have points towards it saying these will have to be done. So our support is going and saying we understand supporting the concept, but moving forward, we expect a much broader look at how this transportation network is going to be defined. During the 25th meeting, I brought up three major points concerning transportation. I also brought up some of the economics, and I'll touch on both. In summary, I was concerned, and I guess I'll use I so I don't want to put anyone else in my boat. A termination specifically at Ridgewood. That's what the precinct plan calls for right now. There was concerns that it would do very minimal to help the traffic in the neighborhood. There's an issue of the connection to the arterials. As shown in the precinct at full build-out, it seems reasonable. But the interim solution between all the phases being built out is still an issue. You need roads, sewer, and water. All of those come from different directions, north, east, and west. Resolving that is going to be a difficult task, and someone's going to have to take that up. The other issue I brought up is a connection to Wilkes. It is in the master transportation plan right now that the WRCP should connect from Grant to Wilkes. Wilkes and the other MMM study is supposed to be realigned, and also when you actually do the math on the traffic, it was 33,000 vehicles on Wilkes that should basically hold 12,000. That was the summation of the points that I went through last time. The only element that's really had any design consideration in this network, that I would call it, is that Ridgewood collector. I kind of want to walk through an example on why we need to have a better look at this, and this will echo some of the points that Al brought up and even some of the questions Councillor Havixbeck that you gave to Al. Right now, that collector system, is supposed to go on this route here. There's some valuable natural areas in there. So the Hart Trail and this big block of red up here, and what's known as the Ridgewood Forest or Buckingham Forest, depending on who you talk to, is this big blob in the middle there. Those are high-quality natural areas, and they want to be preserved. Currently, the alignment for that road, the WRCP extension is shown in green. The current alignment, as close as I can mock up in my computer program to the precinct plan, is shown in cyan. It bisects that forest and brings traffic all the way up to the Hart Trail. Previously, CCHP tabled a different, an alternative, a southern alignment that went all the way down to the CN main line. I'm not saying one is good or one is bad. What I'm showing is that there are options to be looked at. The first one, the one that's written, they say, you know, going through the forest will show a nice, it'll be a nice gateway into the community. You can get the same thing through the forest that the William R. Clement Parkway is going to go through. It takes traffic away from the Hart Trail. There's been talk about wildlife corridors being put in. It would give you space for that. Again, there's going to be multiple reasons that the city, the residents, the developers may have issues, but that conversation has to be had. One of the main reasons that we were given back that this route would not work was an extension of the time. You have so much more road to travel, it would be a deterrent to people to take it. They would want to now go through the existing streets. It was a valid concern, so I ran the math. Basically, you end up with a difference of 400 meters of road, and you get about 12 seconds more travel time. So if we're willing to take one of the highest quality lands for 12 seconds, it's a sad state. There may be more prevailing reasons. This is just an example of how complex the issues that we have and how much discussion needs to be done moving forward to make sure we have an acceptable network. This is the, so I guess to reiterate, the Ridgewood self-development adds significant complexity to the network. The blending and balance of all the network types will have a defining impact on the quality of life of Charleswood inhabitants. There was a study done, let's see, yeah, so this network study, sorry, I'm going all over the place here. Sorry, guys. This is the one I want to show. There was a MMM study in 2012. It had a limited depth of scope. It did look fairly broad. But the depth was insufficient. It did not consider the Ridgewood precinct development. It was completed previous to the opening of IKEA and Seasons of Tuxedo, and it did not consider the WRCP or Wilkes. So while it was, you know, I'll use Al Roberts' words, it was an interesting read, it was fairly limited in use for planning. What we're asking for moving forward is this network, the study, and this could be the study that was motioned at the July 17th meeting, should include Shaftesbury twinning, because this is part of the network as far as we're concerned. I've had chats with Laxdal, the Ridgewood Collector, all connections to the WRCP, Hart Trail crossings and greenway requirements. This is the level that I think is required to actually come up with a feasible plan. The second thing I brought up June 25th meeting was the economics. I think it's important to note where we're at as a city. This is right off of winnipegbudget.ca or Winnipeg City Budget, your site anyway. Shortfalls of $74 million in 2014, $94 million in 2015. We are not cash heavy, so we can just go and take on any project that we feel would be great to do. There's a priority, scarce resources. We have to be very careful on which ones we select. If I look at the WRCP configuration, if we just go to Ridgewood as the precinct plan shows, I use the Chief Pegasus extension numbers. So that's again off the city site. You got about 1.5 kilometers of new road, that's about $28 million. The city still needs to acquire land, they don't have the entire right of way. There's also going to be tree removal and replanting. They're taking out a forest, and there's the no net loss policy for the city, so that will come at a cost as well. That smaller road's around a $30 million touch. If you talk about connecting to Wilkes, take the $30 million from the last slide, add an underpass, which from based on our meetings with Public Works seems to be the prevailing thought of how that would be handled, and using Plessy, another $77 million, and Wilkes is going to be realigned based on the MMM study that's been referenced before. That's 3.7 kilometers, so $65 million for that. We're talking at a $170 million project.
I think we kind of get your point, and if you want to,
or I'll keep it quick. Yep. I brought this up before, the $54 million, and so the summary here is that if there's $54 million of value in this precinct, whether or not you choose to do the $30 million option or the $170 million option is critical to whether or not this is feasible or not. It's sensitive to those numbers. There's been comments before that these other roads, they add a broader function to the network, which is true, but that should be caveated with a time. The inner transportation corridor, all those things that has the broader function are so far from being realized, there has to be some reasonable point where it doesn't make sense to do it now, then later, because we're not in a position where we've got the cash at hand. So basically, to conclude, I just want to assert that the traffic requirement for the Charleswood area is complex and requires careful analysis to determine the optimal configuration to balance the economic needs of the city, the efficient movement of goods and people, and the minimal impact to natural habitat. The city needs to carefully weigh its priority list and be clear on what this new development will contribute to the city's greater expansion needs. With other housing projects such as the Yards in Fort Rouge, Tuxedo Point down the street, plus the larger goal of revitalizing your downtown with new residential, the city must reconcile the fact that this development will require significant infrastructure for it to add any level of value to the city. I spent 12 years in research and development field, so I'm familiar with the fact that even the most well-thought-out designs are routinely trumped by the economic reality, which I feel accurately describes some of the sub-areas in this plan. While some within the plan are not dependent on this, most are, and that means a careful consideration and evaluation at the sub-area proposal stage is paramount, and the developers must be held accountable to the precinct plan requirements. One day when the infrastructure is feasible, this development should proceed, and when that happens, the existing Charleswood residents should welcome the new community of neighbors. We're just not there yet. Thank you.
Stay put. Councillor Habersfeld.
Okay, so you're appearing here for this project now. And
yes, for the conceptual precinct plan, yes.
Okay. I just want to know for you, because I pulled your handout from the June 25th
sure.
meeting where you went through a fact-based assessment of the Clement Parkway extension in relation to the Ridgewood South precinct plan.
That's right.
You've made some comment here, though, that I just want to be sure you were clear on. That
sure.
In the report received by this committee December 12, 2012, it was a study, the study that you were already suggesting occur, about the existing traffic issues. And the recommendations were for Clement Parkway extension to Wilkes out of that report. And that's what's moving forward in the budget, as well as it, I thought your presentation said that Shaftesbury needed twinning, and that was also a recommendation from Grant to Sterling Lyon. So I just want to clarify that you understood that from that same report.
No, I just have that crystal clear. I understand that that's the recommendation, and for the city greater needs, it makes sense that you would want that road to get to Wilkes, and that was one of the basis of my June 25th points. But to do that, I wanted to show that because it makes sense from a design aspect, you've got $170 million you're going to have to find in your capital budget in 2014.
Well, the intention is for that route to go all the way to Bishop Grandin by 2021.
Absolutely. No, I understand. I've read the city master plan, and the intentions are great.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's got to come up with the money. So I was basically just showing that there is, yes, as even though it would be a fantastic thing for Winnipeg to have all these transportation networks, we still have to fund it, and there's other projects that may have a higher priority. May. It's up to you guys to decide what those priorities are, not me. I'm just giving you some information to base
so
it on.
So I'm not clear. On what basis are you supportive of the plan now?
I'm supportive on the plan because I think they've done an excellent job in actually outlining how this precinct should work. I think the precinct plan process is valid to say, look, we're going to take this massive piece of land and come up with a cohesive plan and not let each developer develop their land individually. That was something that was brought up by, I think, Donovan at Landmark, and I think that's a valid point. So that is my condition of supporting the plan, is I think if development's going to happen, and we can't be anti-development, we just have to be anti-dumb development. So if it's going to be done intelligently, we can support it. If it's done haphazardly without the proper planning, we shouldn't support that. So the concept is sound, and now it's time to take it to the next level.
Thank you. Anything good? That's good. Thanks, Wesley. Very good.
You're welcome.
All right, we'll be back here at now 7:30.